Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Big Papi is giving away $25,000 for Game 3 of the World Series on Fox Bet Super 6 app. Super 6 players have won over $5 million, and you could be the next jackpot winner. Scan the QR code, download the app, and answer 6 questions about Game 3 before the first pitch tomorrow night on Fox. Don't miss out. It's free to play.
Braves win Game 3, go up 2-1. Yeah, Houston got ahead and just kind of rolled last night. We kind of knew that. Escape QuickBooks quicksand with NetSuite by Oracle. Go to netsuite.com/herd. Give you control and visibility over your HR, your e-commerce, and more. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, James Harden hasn't been putting up the scoring numbers we typically see from him.
Interesting. There's a rule change in the league, and it kind of goes right at his game.
And he talked about that as well. He hasn't scored more than 20 points in a game this season, and he only has a 36% field goal percentage so far.
That's crazy. Like, he's one of the great scorers in league history.
Yeah. It's the lowest of his career. But the Nets lost to the Heat last night, 106-93.
Heat looked very good, by the way. Bam Adebayo against that skinny jeans Brooklyn Nets team. Nobody wants to play defense. Bam had his way last night.
Bam has developed a lot and is a great player, and Kyle Lowry's been a good addition for them as well.
Yeah.
But after that loss, he said his offseason rehab, James Harden said his offseason rehab is a big reason for the slow start.
As much as I want to get back to just, you know, 30s and 40 points, you know what I mean? It's like, I can't do that. You know what I mean? As much as I want to, obviously would love to. I had no opportunities to play pickup or nothing this summer. You know what I mean? Everything was a rehab for 3 months from a grade 2 injury that happened three times in one season. So, but this is all going to make me stronger at the end of the season. So I just embrace moments like this and things like this, and I just keep pushing through it.
His game, it's interesting. It's a little passive now when I watched last night. He, first of all, Brooklyn is not a very good defensive team, and Miami is so well coached. And last year was a weird year for Miami where Tyler Hero got in the doghouse, and now Miami is...
When they had a lot of injuries coming off of that, yeah, that bubble
they
run.
I would say they look like the second best team I've seen. I've seen Miami play twice. I watched half of this. I've seen Miami play twice and Milwaukee play twice. Those are the two best teams in the entire league. I do think the East is better than the West for the first time in a long time. But it Harden's interesting because of the rehab, apparently. And he's not as aggressive offensively because he's not getting the calls. So
that's actually smart for him to adjust his game to that. If the rule changes is not in his favor, then don't try and, you know, put your body through that, and don't try and go for something that's not provided to you anymore. But the hamstring injury was the issue. He missed 2 games to hamstring tightness April 1st and April 4th, returned April 5th, and then re-aggravated it and missed 18 consecutive games from April 7th to May 11th, and then did it again, game 1 against the Bucks on June 5th. So as he mentioned, this was an ongoing injury for him last year, and he had to rehab it during the offseason.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Like, I think some of these teams are going to take a little while to get going.
Yeah.
It's a very long season. Obviously, you want to see some growth week to week and game to game, but I'm not overly concerned about his ability to get in shape. We've seen this from him before.
Yeah. The game tonight, I'm not going to watch a ton of it. I'll watch half of it because the NFL's on. But I think the Bulls play the Knicks tonight, and I'm interested to watch that. Chicago's got a bunch of guys.
Do. It's Knicks at Chicago.
What time does it start Pacific time?
5.
Ah.
Yeah, it's tough.
So I'll watch the first quarter, and then I'll go to the NFL. Maybe I'll do double screen it. But it's interesting because Chicago's got a bunch of guys.
Do you have the 2 screens?
Yeah, I can go. What I do, Joy, is I buy a lot of different packages, and I put it in my computer.
Yeah, that's
so Yeah. So, but Chicago's got a lot of guys with a bunch to prove. They got a lot of interesting guys. Chicago, New York tonight. I'm going to talk about that something tomorrow because that interests me.
And they're playing well. They're 4-0.
Yeah.
So the Bengals are one of the hottest teams in the NFL right now.
Woo.
They're at the top of the AFC North with a 5-2 record.
Wow.
Cincinnati Bengals. But Joe Burrow says the team is not satisfied with what they have done so far.
I think we have to do a good job of
staying focused, not getting complacent. You know, we're in a place that we haven't been in a while, but, you know, we're not satisfied with where we are. We got to go out to practice every day, keep getting better, because other teams are going to keep getting better as well. And we got bigger aspirations, like I said, than 5-2. So we're going to keep getting better every day, go out to practice, you know, get through our reps, come back in, watch the film, just keep grinding.
Should be 6-1
there.
They had Green Bay beat twice with field goals. They should be 6-1.
Well, they're 10.5-point favorites against the Jets this weekend.
So again, this is another favorite I like. I like them against the Jets.
It's ridiculous.
I know, but it's become college football.
It has. I mean, if you see a line like that on Fox Bet, normally you're like easy underdog.
Oh, I
how are the Jets going to score points? Sorry, Healy.
No, but I mean, seriously, I like Kansas City this week. 9 points in the current NFL feels like 6 points 3 years ago. It really does.
Mike White will be the starter for the Jets.
Okay, I'll take Joe Burrow and those guys win 33-7. seriously, am I nuts?
This will be his first career start. They did trade for Joe Flacco, but he won't join the team until Friday.
The Jets went traded for Joe Flacco?
Yes.
Oh, okay, that's a difference maker. 33-8. I mean, seriously.
No, Mike White is going to be the starter.
I'm not trying to bag on the Jets, but
but it is what it is. Like, this is where they are.
We have a trend now in the NFL in the last 3 weeks. Tom Brady talked about this. The best quarterback wins virtually every game now.
The separation between have and have nots is getting
gigantic.
Dramatic.
It's getting worse.
The rich are getting richer.
The point spread last weekend, the average margin of victory was 19. That's Saturday football. And there's not a single underdog of 7 or more that's won a game this year. That's college football. I mean, seriously, like college football, you get one upset a weekend.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the separation is just
becoming extreme. The Jags beat the Colts. Like, could you see who's the worst team? Could you see Houston beating the Rams this weekend?
Look, anybody can have a bad Sunday, and
it's crazy.
But it's starting to feel like that. It's starting to feel like
I want to ask my next
surprising.
Guest about that. The Brady stuff is fascinating to me.
Well, yeah, I think I'm with you. I think the Bengals win big. So earlier this month, Myles Garrett had some Halloween fun. I love Halloween. So
you do.
Get ready for tomorrow.
Yeah.
He created a graveyard on his front lawn with his Halloween decorations and had gravestones with the names of some of the quarterbacks from around the league and particularly within his division. Mm. And Hall of Famer Bruce Smith liked the idea and he made his own version. He posted a video with way more gravestones decorating outside his house. It's really funny. You see Drew Bledsoe on there, Rex Grossman, Tommy Kramer, Mark Brunell. The names are really kind of amazing as well. Obviously, Bruce played a while ago. He said, "Miles, I was inspired by your graveyard, but here's what a real graveyard looks like. To you and my fellow pass rushers, keep hunting." You have Steve Young, Joe Montana, Randall Cunningham, Warren Moon, Vinny Testaverde, Donovan McNabb, Elway, Marino, Aikman, Phil Simms, Bernie Kosar. It's like a trip down memory lane of how you get to the Hall of Fame.
It is. If Lawrence Taylor never plays, Bruce Smith gets even more credit. Bruce Smith was an unbelievable player.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Lawrence Taylor because I've had to interview Bruce Smith before. I don't know if you've ever interviewed him. And I don't really generally get intimidated interviewing people. Bruce Smith is an intimidating person to interview, and so is LT. I'm like, well, I got to make sure I ask the right questions. The Bruce Smith and Lawrence Taylor, like,
that's how I feel about our next guest. You have to ask the right questions. He's very intimidating. His presence.
He's got to come correct.
Yeah.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joy Taylor with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
All right, let's bring on Greg Olsen. He played in the NFL for 14 years. Fifth most receptions and receiving yards in NFL history for a tight end. So Brady this week, we talked about this. I always like when people are critical of something they benefit from. Because everybody, any politician can complain about something that doesn't benefit from them. But Brady said the NFL is becoming too much of a skills competition. He goes, when I got into this league, you could win with good defense, a run game. It's like, you can't do that. He goes, when we were in New England, Pittsburgh could beat us just on tough. Like the teams that were skill teams, we always beat them. And it's interesting because Tom's benefiting from this because, and Joy and I were talking about this, is that 2 weekends ago, the best quarterback won every game most easily. The only exception was Josh Allen, who if he doesn't slip, they score and they win. Last weekend, similarly. Tannehill, who's pretty darn good, was the only second best quarterback in the game to beat the quarterback. And it is funny, when you came into this league, Greg, it felt like there were a lot of ways to win. It doesn't feel like that much anymore.
There was. When I got drafted by Chicago, you know, they made their base on defense, turnovers. Devin Hester's returning a kick or a punt every other time.
Yes.
Offensively, we always had great field position. We had teams kicking the ball out of bounds on opening kickoffs, right? They say, we're going to give the Bears offense the ball at the 40, and we don't care. We had great field position. We could be serviceable. Don't turn the ball over. Running game. Be okay. And we'd win the game. Those days are slowly and slowly coming to an end. At the end of the day, it's always been a quarterback-driven league. It's never been a bigger quarterback-driven league than it is this year.
Yeah, Brady said that the 600 touchdown pass to Mike Evans, he wouldn't have thrown 5 or 6 years ago because the safety would take your head off.
Kill you.
He goes, now it's just like, it's skills competition. It's just, can I make a throw?
Boom. And Evans ends up on his feet and the safety ends up on his, because the safety's so worried about taking it on. Right? I don't know how you play defense anymore. You can't.
Yeah. So you called a Washington Packers game in week 7. So tonight they won't have Devontae Adams. You know, I've said this. Saying Green Bay is good is repetitive. They've been good for 12 years with Aaron Rodgers. That I don't worry about. Are they special? I have watched this. I watched them against Cincinnati. I watched them against Chicago. They feel so dependent on Devontae. What was your takeaway, Washington, Green Bay? What's your takeaway on their offense right now?
You know, so I've seen him play Chicago, and then I saw him play Washington. And coming out of the broadcast, we actually closed the broadcast saying, I actually really like this style of Packers offense and this Packers team, because it doesn't feel, in years past, you know, they'd go into the playoffs and it would be like, if Aaron Rodgers doesn't just throw the whole team on his back and carry them, he has to play near flawlessly. He has to throw for 300 yards or they're going to lose. I've seen him now play twice, granted not against the top teams in the league, but their ability to run the ball, their defense is a lot improved, significantly improved, and a lot better than people think coming into this year versus how they were the last couple years.
Yeah.
Petton's defense wasn't terrible. They got rid of him after the NFC Championship game. They thought they kind of let it get away. Joe Barry, bad week one, great last 5 weeks.
Right.
Generating turnovers, dealing with their two best defensive players aren't playing. If they continue to get these guys back, Za'Darius Smith, Alexander in the back end, if they start piecing these guys together, they added, Whitney Mercilus. They got some guys now. If they get healthy, defensively, they're a lot better than people think. Offensively, they always have a chance. Losing Devontae Adams, of course, is huge, but they got two good running backs. Their offensive line is pretty good. There's really not a hole on this team. Those are the teams that if I'm going to pick to go deep playoff runs, it's like Tampa Bay. There's no holes.
Right. Speaking of Chicago, an interesting game. The teams aren't very good, but Chicago hosts San Francisco, and the Niners have lost 4 straight games. So in that division right now, I don't think they have the roster of the Rams. They're not as dynamic as Arizona, and they don't have Russell Wilson. They feel like 4-4. And I like Kyle Shanahan, but his record now is Mike Singletary's. The difference is we consider Shanahan young, his dad, he's offensively brilliant. His record's Mike Singletary. And that division is an unforgiving division. Kind of take me, as you look at film of both teams, what is San Francisco doing you like? There's something off. There's something's not working. I thought the game plan in a monsoon, Wentz had some really bad early throws, but they still coached them with confidence. I feel like sometimes Kyle's kind of an intense, rigid personality. I wouldn't want to be Garoppolo. There are series I'm like, they don't want Jimmy to throw the ball. What are you seeing with the Niners? How do they pivot and get this right?
Well, I think what you said is exactly right. I think they're playing with the idea of we have to protect our quarterback. Now, whether do they still think he's injured? Do they not trust him throwing the ball? Like, what element of his game I still think they're trying to figure out. So I think from the outside watching their film, we're all trying to kind of figure it out together. But the one thing that nobody can argue is that they're playing offense trying to protect their quarterback. And that wasn't the case a couple years ago. Jimmy G came in there, got the big contract after winning 5 in a row when they made the trade for him on a lost season, dealt with some, but then obviously the Super Bowl year, played really well. Last year dealt with some injuries, this year kind of being dinged up. It seems like they get really conservative when they feel like he's not 100%. It seems like to me that if they feel he's good, he's in a good place, he's healthy, we can kind of let him go. You know, let him play and complement this run game. The run game is still very good. I still really like their scheme. But like anything, the league starts catching on. You know, 2-3 years ago, using the speed sweep motions and the receivers or the lead blockers was very innovative. It kind of caught the league by storm. Defenses adjust. teams adjust. There's different styles. There's different ways to coach it. Can they evolve without a passing game to go along with it, right? Everyone in this league says, oh, you got to establish the run to be able to throw. That's not true. You throw the ball to allow yourself the ability to run the ball. Trying to do it backwards, both teams this weekend, Chicago and San Francisco, are kind of playing in that mold. It's very hard to score points. It's very hard to be a dynamic offense if you're going to approach it from that way.
So I want to talk about Seattle because I'm from the Pacific Northwest, and as a kid growing up, I went to college. I went to Seahawks training camp. I'll always have a soft spot for the Seahawks. That was my team. But I have said this before, is I can think two things simultaneously. I can think Pete Carroll's a Hall of Famer. He won a Super Bowl, should have won two probably, and he won a national title. He kind of rebooted his career. He's a credit to the game. You told me their meetings, you once told me, are as good as any meetings you've ever been in. And then I can also believe, boy, 12 years is a long time. That's a long time. Pat Riley used to say, 10 years, players tune you out. So I watched Seattle without Russell Wilson, and we know they're not the same team. But I told the audience a couple weeks ago, I said, I want you to watch Seattle and tell me what they do well without him. And there's not a lot of answers there. And I do wonder, Russell comes back. Is it outrageous to say, Pete's 70, he's been great, maybe move him upstairs, that maybe it's time for a new voice?
You know, I don't know. I think anytime you start talking about replacing two positions, right, the head coach or the quarterback, the secondary question that you need to ask is replace them with who, right? Everyone wants to replace the quarterback with who, replace the head coach with who. I think that's across the board. Do I think you just go across the board and say Pete Carroll's voice is tuned out? I don't think his voice is tuned out. I was in that locker room last year, didn't necessarily agree with everything, but the guys in the room respond to him. They love him. They respect him. The issue there, and I came under fire for saying this on the Thursday night pregame show a couple weeks back when I was out here, the problem is at the time they had Russell. It was prior to him getting hurt. They have Russell Wilson, and for three quarters of every game, they forget they have Russell Wilson. And then in the fourth quarter, he makes magic, and everyone goes and celebrates after the game, and we win, and he's the most winning quarterback in the start of career. All those things are true. If they don't allow Russell Wilson, assuming he comes back healthy, to be the $40 million Russell Wilson quarterback, you're wasting all of your time. You have him to carry the team. They don't allow him to carry the team at all time. That offense we saw last week with Geno was really the offense we'd see for the first half, three quarters, and then all of a sudden they'd flip it and they'd say, go win the game, Russell. They didn't end up doing that. They tried to just squeak it out at the end and they came up short. That's been the philosophy there. It was there the last half of the season last year once the defense kind of got it together. It wasn't the philosophy the first half of the season when we were the best offense in the league. It's kind of a weird back and forth where they say, Russell's our guy and he's going to lead us, but then they don't always want him to carry the ball and throw it 45 times. That's why you paid him. That's why you have him. You're fortunate to have him.
Couldn't I argue that's what Arizona's doing with Kyler?
Of course.
First
play to your strengths.
He's our guy.
Go. Play to their... You're going to live and die with your best player. Russell Wilson's their best player. He makes it go. He might throw two picks one game. You can't lose your mind. He's going to win you, as he's shown, a lot of football games. Let him be Russell, not just in the two-minute drive, not just in the fourth quarter. Let him be that guy the whole game.
So we were talking this week about Dave Wannstedt always says, you can lose two games in a row, you can't lose three because you'll start losing guys in the locker room. And Dave's like, you can lose games, you can't lose locker rooms. And Nick Sirianni is Philadelphia coach. He's not great at the podium. He kind of rambles. His metaphors are not great. I don't need to play it again. It's kind of legendary. but it's an interesting one, Greg, because I think to myself, because I'm in a verbal profession, Joy and I are, I have a bias toward McVay is so good at the mic, Tomlin's good at the mic. There are guys that I'm like, boom.
Yep.
It doesn't matter for Belichick. He's got a trophy room. It doesn't matter. But when Sirianni kind of struggles, I always think to myself, you got 55 alpha males in this room. Some of those guys are like, bruh. You know, Pete Carroll's always direct, boom. When I hear Sirianni, am I out of my gourd that even those little podium moments that Tomlin's so gifted at, that they do matter, that they do send a message?
You don't have to win the podium if you're winning the games, right? So your point about Belichick and his history, and we've seen other guys kind of have that approach where they're never going to win the press conference. You're never going to walk away from the press conference and feel moved. You're never going to feel enlightened. But then where it does come into effect, which is where I agree with you, is with a team like Philly, it helps when you are losing. when you have someone up there at the podium who's delivering this message of optimism and hope, even if it a lot of times is fake, it does give the energy that, hey, we've got an answer. We have somebody in charge who's going to find the answers. We might not have it. We might not have it right now, but this guy in charge, if McVay ever fell into one of those and he continued, you'd be like, all right, I know they might be struggling. They haven't struggled a lot, but when they did struggle, it always felt like he had the answers. It always felt like the guy at the podium taking the hard questions had the right answers, had the way they were going to improve, had the message that the team was going to hear, very similar to what the media was hearing. It matters when you struggle. It doesn't matter when you win. If you're winning a lot of games, the podium means nothing.
Yeah.
But it matters when things are bad. And right now, if they're bad in Philly, can that message resonate publicly? But of course, it also, it's a very similar message that's being shared in the locker room in their team settings.
Greg Olson, as always, great. More of him coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Weather's nasty. Don't change your plans. Change your wiper blades. Michelin wiper blades. Get them at Walmart. Greg Olson, 14 years, 3 Pro Bowls. Drafted a first rounder out of the University of Miami. That program's not in great shape, but there's no reason to burn you for that. Not like my Trojans are doing anything. Okay, so I'm going to ask you about the Baker Case Keenum thing. Baker's better than Case. He's got a better arm. He was a number one pick. Nobody disputes that. But they're both about 6'1", 215. They were both kind of unheralded Texas recruits. They're both marginal athletes who need help. They need protection. And so tell me about the locker room. So Case comes out. And he beats Denver and plays well. And then let's say this week, Pittsburgh, he plays well. And now Baker comes back and goes to Cincinnati against Joe Burrow, who's on fire and loses. Is it possible to have 5 or 6 guys like peel off and go, bro, got to win games?
You got to win games. But I do think guys in NFL locker rooms are smart enough to realize who did you play, who did you lose to, who did you win, right? So, I mean, we all watched Keenum's game the other night. He was fine.
He was fine.
He was fine. They didn't win that game. If Baker plays that game, they probably win by more, right? So I don't necessarily think the wins, and guys know that. I'll tell you, we had Cleveland, Chicago earlier in the season. It was actually Fields' debut. And coming out of that game, going into that game and coming out of that game, I thought Baker's style of play, Stefanski's system, the run, what they can do with those two backs, the play action, they were just getting Landry back. We thought they were going to get Odell back. We'll see what happens there. But like, I thought that was a perfect marriage. Yeah. I think his skill set, he's athletic, he's scrappy, he runs around, and what Stefanski can do from an offensive mind, who I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I think he's a brilliant play caller.
I think he's incredible. Yeah. I thought they had a really good thing going. The question becomes, just like I said to you before, it's not so much, should you stick with this quarterback? Who are you going to replace him with? Are you going to pay him $40 million? That's the question with guys like Baker, right? It's not so much, I'll take Baker as my quarterback any day of the week. I think he's good. I think he's tough. I think he's talented. It's how much does he cost? Yeah. That's the equation with quarterbacks when they're on their rookie contracts that comes into play.
Yeah. Are you surprised at all? I am. I mean, I guess I am. We thought it was an upgrade. Stafford is so good so fast.
I'm not surprised at all.
Do you know he like ranks as the top quarterback in the league against blitzes?
He's so good. When I heard that he was going there, just having played against the Rams a bunch of times, watching from afar what McVay can do with that offense and how much they've done when Goff was there, people didn't realize, I don't think. I think people who followed the game really, really closely appreciated Stafford in Detroit. But because he was in Detroit, it was like he was in Siberia. It was like he was like off in this like other universe, you know, and no one ever saw him do anything.
Thanksgiving.
Right, like you saw him on Thanksgiving and they were playing the Vikings at noon and like you maybe caught the second half. Like, that guy is good, man. He's as talented as anybody there is. He is a stud. I mean, that guy, to be able to put him in L.A. with McVay, those offensive weapons, Cooper Kupp, and that defense, I mean, that was the best move they could have done. And I give McVay a lot of credit. He could have stuck with Goff and said, we're okay. We paid him a lot. We've won a lot of games. We can make it work. But he realized, he said, listen, as much as I like Goff and as much as he's won for us around here, if we have a chance to go get Stafford, we can take this thing to a whole nother level, and that's what they've done.
By the way, Cooper Kupp went to Eastern Washington University.
He's a stud.
Oh, he's great. So, I saw him play. I went to college there, so I went and saw him one game, and it's funny. Did you ever, in the NFL, a small school guy came in, and you were like, the hell? How did he go to Colgate?
Yeah.
You had one?
I mean, there's guys.
Josh Norman, by the way.
Josh Norman. Second, third year in the league, he's like one of the 2015. So he would have been in like year three or four, maybe. So he was still relatively young. Hadn't played a ton our Super Bowl year. We're like, how did this guy go to Coastal Carolina? Right? Like, it just doesn't make sense. So there's guys like, but Cooper Kupp, like, he's always open. I always wonder, like, how does no one guard him?
What? Not only open, wide open.
And like 40 yards down the field.
All the time.
McVay's, again, you talk about Stefanski, McVay's play calling and what he mixing it up and the play action stuff and the deep shots. They throw three big 40-yard deep posts to Kupp or whoever twice a game, and there's not a person in the screen.
Isn't that crazy?
Scheme and design goes a long way.
It does.
It goes a long way.
He called Washington Green Bay. He's now calling the Niners and the Bears. It's Greg Olson. So, I was talking to somebody employed by an NFL team last night, and he said, you know, you guys have all bailed on Tua. He goes, but if the Deshaun Watson thing, because of legal matters, by next Monday isn't resolved, probably not. He goes, Tua's played great in back-to-back games, and seven of the next 10 games, he plays a lot of Giants, Jets, Carolina. He said, I don't think the story on Tua yet is complete. What have you seen? What do you make? 13 games through, we put his stats up earlier. They're not terrible. What is he?
No, I think the point you made earlier was right. I think if the Deshaun Watson situation was different and he was none of that happened and he was starting in Houston and everything was all fine and dandy and there wasn't this dangling carrot out there for a team to make a play, I think the narrative around Tua would be significantly different. I think that's what happens, right? Storylines get created in the NFL where the second you attach a team, in this case Miami, to a player who, take all the baggage aside, is an elite-level quarterback.
Yeah.
Who any team in the league outside of maybe four or five would say, yes, he's an upgrade over what I have. The second that marriage was put together and that connection was put together, he's dead.
Now, do players in the league, do they hear the rumors? Can it affect a player?
He knows it. He's not dumb. He's not naive. I mean, hopefully he's not like diving into it and really studying, but he's not living in a bubble. His family's hearing it. His parents are asking him, what are you hearing? What are you listening? Are they telling you anything? You need to go talk to them. That's human nature. He's a young kid, high draft pick, had a great college career. By all means, seems like an awesome kid, hard worker, tough, came back from injury, everything you'd ask. And unfortunately, the situation he's been thrusted in is certain part of his fan base, certain part of the organization, of course, is enamored by the Deshaun Watson situation, and he's the one caught in the middle. He's asked to go be a professional every week, say the right things, be a team guy, go out there and put himself in harm's way to play quarterback for the Dolphins, knowing that at any second, he could be replaced. It's a hard way to live.
It is. I've said this to Joy. This is where fans always, anything a player faces, fans say, we get paid a lot of money. The idea that I could be traded to the Vice Network tomorrow, it would wreck me. I'd literally drive to work. I'd be like, my bosses don't like me.
Yeah.
Were you ever in a trade rumor?
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Yeah. So this is a great trade rumor. So in 2010, we lost to Green Bay in the NFC Championship.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in Chicago. So this is now like offseason of 2011, draft of 2011. I get called in to Jerry Angelo, at the time was the general manager of Chicago. He calls me in and says that they have a trade on the table. So we just brought in Mike Martz. For context, we hired Mike Martz.
Yeah.
We fired our coordinator. His first press conference, he goes on about how much he doesn't need a tight end.
Yeah.
And I was their leading receiver the year before. So the Chicago media is eating up whether I'm going to come back, I'm gone. Long story short, he tells me we have a trade with the Patriots, so pay attention tomorrow. We have something on the table based on how the draft falls. Gronkowski falls out of the first round. They take him with one of their second-round picks. Jerry calls me back in the next day and says, we are no longer going to trade you. You are on our team. I was like, what? I was like, all right. So ended up playing that year. We end up going to the NFC Championship, losing to Green Bay. The following offseason, I get traded.
And you weren't happy about it.
I wasn't happy about it. It doesn't matter how much they pay you. Your pride and your ego at some point kicks in.
How good was he, Greg Olson? See you tomorrow.